One Man's Family, winner of 44 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 26th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Today, new move in an old game. Mrs. Jack Barber, mother of six beautiful daughters, comes up out of a deep sleep to find herself sitting alone in the living room at 10:45 on a pleasant May evening.
Jack? Wait a minute, I'm coming.
Howdy ho, Aunt Betty. I'm sorry.
Come on in, Pinky, the girls are asleep.
Oh, thanks, I'll be quiet. Uncle Jack home yet?
No, I'm waiting up for him.
He told me to stop by. Big news, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he called me at the office about 5 p.m. Said he had a big fat airmail from Cousin Consider.
You sit down, Pinky, but keep your voice down.
Okay. He says I'm back in the money, but he couldn't tell me all the details. Where's Uncle Jack speaking?
Argonaut Woman's Club.
Oh? What about?
The separate worlds of parents and children. He's getting paid for it.
Good old Cashel? What do you know?
It was a talk he made at the last Bar Association dinner, and somebody's wife said they'd pay him $50 if he'd give it at her woman's club. He came to be quite a lecturer. What time is it?
It's 10:47. I suppose you heard Maggie made me an uncle again.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody say what they're going to name it?
Did you tell Greta about Margaret's baby?
Oh, sure. She was surprised to realize Grandfather only has a total of 4 great-grandchildren. She said, wait till we get started. She kind of leaves the impression they're going to need an adding machine. You asleep?
No, I'm listening. It's delicious.
I thought your eyes looked kind of glazed.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I love to hear voices fading in and fading out.
I don't want to outstay my welcome.
Oh, I have to set up for Jack anyway, Pinky.
Yeah. And if I go home, Mom's away, and I'll have to talk to Grandfather. He's still up. Lights on in the library. Boy, I hear Grandfather pulled a real blooper, getting General Stone all the way out from Washington, and then Teddy left.
And Teddy knew the General was coming, though.
She did?
But Mrs. Kettleman told Zeppelin, and Zeppelin told Joan, and Joan told me, Teddy said if the General really loves her, he can chase her. She isn't going to wait for any man.
Say, look, you're half dead. Why don't you go to bed? I'll wait up for Uncle Jack.
No, I want to hear about his speech, Pinky. Did you ever hear of a person named Miss Cindy Sedgwick?
No. Who's Miss Cindy Sedgwick?
She's a great admirer of my husband's.
Yep.
She's a maiden lady, Pinky. She never married. And every time Jack makes a speech, she manages to be in the audience.
Well, why?
Admires him. She's a legal stenographer for somebody in the Webster Building, and she's admired my husband ever since high school.
Golly, then you knew her, too?
Well, I know who she is.
Gee, how'd you find out? Uncle Jack tell you?
This is the sort of thing that seeps out, Pinky.
Huh?
Not that I mistrust Jack for one single second. Oh, no. In fact, he's so loyal and innocent, he doesn't realize what she's up to, and I... Jack?
I'm home.
Oh, well, Pinky's here. Come on in.
How are you there, Uncle Pinky?
Yeah, big news from Elko.
Big news from Hawaii, too, sonny boy. Hi, Betty.
Fine. How'd the speech go?
Well, I left him laughing. Yeah, here you are, Pinky. Cousin Consider sent back that new will, unsigned.
Huh?
You're still his heir, son.
Me?
I'll read you one paragraph from his letter. This is from his island, Lahua. He says, are you comfortable, Betty?
Well, sure, why?
Well, you're looking at me as if you hurt somewhere.
No, I'm fine, Jack, really.
You're tired.
I'm all right, Jack. Don't keep Pinky waiting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Here, son.
Sir?
Take the whole thing along. Read it tonight, and I'll pick it up in the morning.
Oh, thanks a lot, Uncle Jack. Good night, Aunt Betty.
I'll let myself out. Sorry. Good night.
Good night, Pinky.
Betty, is everything all right here?
Everything's perfect, Jack. Just wonderful. Now, tell me about your speech.
Oh, you know, I like it when I do it right. Tonight, I guess I did it right. You got a big hand.
Anybody there I'd know?
Oh, man, I'm tired. Let's go turn off the lights and go to bed.
All right, Jack. Anything you say.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
A needle is small and insignificant, except to a tailor. A dusty amendment to the Constitution, forgotten after reading some seventh grade school book, is small and insignificant too, unless it's the Seventh Amendment, and someone is suing you for all you own, your home, your money, your car, everything. He swears you owe him umpteen $1,000s. You swear you don't. Who's right? And how to prove it? Simple enough. You call for a trial by jury. And that's just where that dry little amendment to the Constitution comes in. The now vital Seventh. It says that indeed you can have an open trial by jury, guaranteeing that justice be done. For the no longer musty amendment reads in part, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. Well, it just didn't happen that way, although we often think our freedoms droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven. No, hard-thinking men in knee pants cast their wisdom into the future. In the city of New York, March 4th, 1789, the wise men of the first Congress, who created the Bill of Rights out of their souls and our need. And so, when accused, you have the right of trial by jury. Fellow citizens who hear all the arguments, then pass an opinion, a judgment that must be adhered to by all interested parties. And you are interested now in that half-forgotten Seventh Amendment. It is one of our freedoms.
Father Barber, dozing in his chair in the library, awakens now as he hears the closing of the front door.
Who came in?
Grandfather? Hey, listen to this. It's from Hawaii. It's from CZ. A letter he wrote Uncle Jack. I just read it under the streetlight.
Lower your voice. Your grandmother's asleep.
Hey, Grandfather, you got your voice back.
Elliot.
Where's the general?
Paul drove him to the airport. He returned to San Antonio. Sit down now. What have you there?
Cousin Consider dropped the idea of the foundation. He's gonna leave his money to me after all. Here, you read it.
Henry, when are you coming to bed?
Hey, Grandmother, I'm sorry. Did I wake you up?
Oh, not at all, Pinky. I've been reading. Did you hear about your mother and Daniel?
Come on down, Fanny. Let her hear we want you to see.
Well, I guess I might as well. No sleep now. Well,
what about Mom? Oh, come on in, Grandmother.
I thought your grandfather would tell you about Hazel. They arrived safely at Elko. Margaret's fine, and the baby is simply beautiful. And they're going to name it for your uncles. He'll be Paul Jack Clifford Lawrence.
Oh, that's great. Goodo.
Why didn't you tell him, Henry?
Fanny, listen to this. From Consider Martin to Jack, he says, languishing here amid the tropic beauties of this seductive island, I have had time to re-evaluate my position and reassess my friendships. And it seems to me that though he has rejected my offers of companionship, declined to use my money, spurned every suggestion I have ever made for his future happiness, still in all, Pinky Murray remains the most delightful personality I have ever known.
Well,
oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
There's more. Surely the creator of this beautiful universe meant men to be joyous. And Pinky, above all people I've known, has capacity for laughter, a potential for gaiety. I have decided not to sign the new will, but to leave the old one in effect. Pinky is to be my sole heir. And perhaps later on, with such funds as these at his disposal, though he declined adventure with me while I was living, he will learn to enjoy life after I have gone. At any rate, he is my dear laddiebuck, and I am deeply sorry that any misunderstanding arose between us. And, the rest is business.
Golly. Why, Pinky.
Yeah? That's easy for you. He's the greatest. When I think of how I let him down, I could... Well, I'll take the letter now, Grandfather.
Yeah.
I'm going to bed now. Good night.
Good night, Pinky. What a sweet letter.
Fanny, it's a new move in an old game. He's after Pinky's soul. The man has never given up and never will.
Why, Henry, why do you always take the negative side?
Negative? Face the facts. You'll be waving goodbye to Pinky as he leaves for Hawaii. And without Greta, you mark my words.
More of the Barbers in just a moment.
Recently, two men were brought before a New York judge. One was an Italian barber who had been naturalized, the other a Brooklyn-born taxi driver. The Italian had been arrested on suspicion of murder, the Brooklyn taxi driver on suspicion of defrauding his company. Both men insisted they were innocent, and both demanded a jury trial. Now, if you had been the judge, to which of the two men would you have granted the benefit of a trial? The barber who was born in Italy, or the American-born taxi driver? Well, actually, both men are equally entitled to a jury trial. According to the 14th Amendment to our Constitution, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And no state has the right to make or enforce any law which will deprive citizens of the privileges. The 14th Amendment also says that no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor can any state deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. When it comes to dealing out justice, every person in the United States is protected by the Constitution. It doesn't make any difference where he was born or what his nationality is, so long as he's a citizen. And no matter what he is accused of, an American citizen cannot be convicted without first being given a chance to prove his innocence. That's how your American Constitution works.
And in the darkness of the master bedroom in the house across the hedge, Betty lies beside Jack with her fingers folded back of her head. That question still unanswered.
Jack?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody come up after the speech to congratulate you?
Oh, sure. Always a few.
Was there anybody I know? Jack? Jack?
Hmm?
Was there anybody I know who came up to the speaker's table afterwards?
Betty, I'm trying to go to sleep, honey.
Just answer this one question. Who came up to the speaker's table afterward? Cindy Sedgwick? She did. Well, well.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 34, Book 126, The Forgotten Birthday, Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 44 national awards, now in its 26th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.